moron. Why did you people let him stay in office? Why didn't you storm the building?
At the Methodist Church. Har, 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 har. That's why Weaver was so upset last night. Me too.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we've done it to another hour.
Oh.
Time to go home.
Flew by.
Back down the dirt road.
No other network could do this but us.
Nope.
Nobody.
Nope. And I'm still looking forward to the day when it's a whole gang of us, and maybe we'll extend it or do a special edition or something. When it's Rick and Mark and all of us all together. Matt Sowards has said he'd like to join in sometime.
That would be good. I've never talked to him. Why not? He would have a great perspective.
So, you know, I still maintain great hopes. But we got to knock it off because John would like to do his show now.
Okay, fine.
All right. So we'll talk to you tomorrow night, God willing, the creek don't rise. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
We use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Wednesday. I'm get back to some environmental stuff today. Holy crap. But however, I got a track of the day to do first. Only because, well, I think it's the little bit of icing on the cupcake from yesterday's apology to the Stolen Generation. And I just picked this track because, you know, with the apology and it being as bipartisan as anyone can expect, there's always going to be a couple of pricks here and there. But the idea is that, you know, everyone's got to get together on this issue and on all the issues that face the war room or the war cabinet that's being formed with the prime minister and the I figured it's a song that you all know well if you've been listening to me for a while, or especially if you were around in the old Fourth Estate radio days. I figured Ben Lee is the guy. Bob tells me we're having a bit of audio weirdies. Let me see if we can get that kind of sorted out. Things improving, Bob? Are we getting better? Hello. Okay. Hopefully, whatever that was, me reseeding a couple things, sorted stuff out. So anyway, I figured we'd do this Ben Lee track, good Australian boy, and I just figured this was the perfect track for today. I wanted to actually play some stuff from an Aboriginal folk singer by the name of Archie Roach, but I didn't have any available. I'll try and fill that little hole, but I figured this was just the track to set the stage for the future. And Mr. Ben Lee, and we're all in this together. So go ahead and roll that, Bob.
Woke up this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. Walking in the city, we're all in this together. The city's changing, 'cause we are changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen, your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you, I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. Think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together. Ask a scientist, it's quantum physics, we are all in this together. And on the subway, we feel like strangers, but we're all in this together. Yeah, I love you, love her, and she loves him, but we are all in this together. You know, baby, there's never been protection in all the history of human connection. Come on, darling, it's all right to show me you don't ever.
Oh, that's just a great song. Such a happy song. Such a happy record. But anyway, we're going to move on. And and we're all in this together vibe of a completely different sort. Gene sent me this, and I'd seen this before, but I think it's definitely worth mentioning. EcoGeek.org had a post yesterday pointing to a great little website with a great little graphical application thing. And the title of the piece is, How Oily is Your Candidate? And this is a really fantastic resource. And it makes me have a few questions. And as I say here at EcoGeek, we find that politicians in general are an oily lot. Indeed, the vast majority of national politicians have significant funding from the oil industry. A cool new online application by Oil Change International takes this data and forms a pleasant graphical representation to help citizens view exactly how much money their favorite and most loathed presidential candidates have received from oil lobbies. And this is updated fairly regularly. But if you check out priceofoil.org, and there's links to follow the oil money. And there's all different ways that you can kind of look at the candidates. You can look at individual candidates. You can actually look at a graphical map that shows the connections of the different oil companies to the different candidates and in graphical, as in pixel size, of their image, how much money they've taken. And you'll never guess, well, you probably can guess, who so far out of all the candidates, I'm not talking about the ones that are still remaining, but all the candidates that ran, and as you would be able to guess, Dennis Kucinich isn't even in the list. But the number one candidate, and I find this really funny, Rudolph Giuliani, no lie, took a whopping $568,708 from oil companies. Now, this is a guy whose campaign ended up being the most expensive campaign per vote in the election so far. The guy got nowhere, but he would take money from anybody. And there was a piece today, I believe, at Crooks and Liars saying how, you know, Giuliani's campaign is over, but he's right back on the $100,000 an appearance speech tour thing kind of deal. Can you believe that right-wingers can have someone perform so badly, yet they'll pay that kind of money to hear them speak? I mean, does that make any sense? No, but nothing these people does ever makes any sense. David, because Rudy likes to get drilled. Yeah, he sure got drilled by the electorate. But you can then break them down. So I'm just going to run through them here. Giuliani, number one, at a whopping $568,000. Then second up, no surprise because it is auto industry connections, Mitt Romney at $345,000+. And then number three overall, yes, a Democrat, Ms. Hillary Clinton, at $235,000. And then you kind of work down McCain, Richardson, Thompson, Barack Obama, and then Brownback, Dodd, Edwards, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at the full list, so out of all the ones remaining, Barack Obama has taken the least amount of oil money, $110,000 so far. But what I find interesting about this is if you go to the on this little application, it's amazing the information that you can get at a click. You click on one of the candidates, and I've just opened up Giuliani with his $568,000 in oil money. It breaks it down into the different companies, and it seems as though the big petrol companies come at the bottom of the list with his, but I guess these are the actual drillers and logistical companies that really have thrown the money at them. Stewart & Stevenson, $36,950. Gulf Offshore Logistics, $27,700. Oil and Gas, $22,000. Valero Energy, $14,000. And then way down at the bottom, you get Shell with $4,200, ExxonMobil with $3,800. Now, I'm going to move on to the Barack Obama breakdown. And this one I find interesting. Barack Obama got a whopping $15,000 from ExxonMobil. And then, you know, there's itsy bits here, you know, with, you know, Hess Oil and Gas, Citation Oil and Gas, you know, a couple of grand. But I find it interesting that ExxonMobil will only spend a couple of grand with someone like Rudy Giuliani, but yet they spend an amazing amount of money in comparison on someone like Barack Obama. And it makes me wonder why that might be. Could it be that they feel that they really need to invest more in the candidates that they think might not or might be more susceptible to other interests, like maybe, you know, green energy, or might actually listen to the folks on the progressive left that believe that we got to get off the oil standard? Yeah, and Lottie says, do they know something we don't know? And this is my question. Yellow says hedging their bets. And so, I mean, I have no definitive answer here. I just found that very interesting that, you know, we talk about how it's the Republicans who are, you know, the party of oil, or at least the Bush family and Dick Cheney with Halliburton and whatnot. But this whole, you know, I'm going to click over onto Hillary Clinton. How does she break down? And it's a really great flash application. It moves very quickly. Now, Exxon's not even on her list. But again, it's the largest is Global Partners LP. I guess it's a liquid petroleum company. $27,000. There's ExxonMobil in third place at $13,200. Now, I focus on ExxonMobil for, you know, specific reason, because when it comes to oil companies, they don't get much more evil than ExxonMobil. You know, it used to be just Exxon, but, you know, the merge helped kind of change the name a little bit, you know, so that might not be, you can't associate the Valdez with this company because it's not the same company anymore, blah, 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 blah. But I find this really interesting, and, you know, there's a $100,000 difference between Barack Obama and Hillary Rodham Clinton in total oil money taken. And, you know, if they're able to throw money around like this and the massive amounts of advertising that they do for a product that we're all stuck to, you know, the profiteering that's going on in that industry is amazing, as we all know. But, you know, and so even John McCain comes down lower than Hillary Rodham Clinton when it comes to total oil money. And I'm not out to bash Democrats here. I'm putting this out there in the light of, why would they be investing so much in Democrats? Is it hedging their bets? Is it hoping to get some insurance that if a Democrat does get in, which hopefully, regardless of whichever one they are, even though they're not my choice, that they're looking to have some protection against maybe, you know, some actual changes in energy policy, you know. We want you to have a secret energy policy set of meetings, too. And they actually list it by contribution, too, in the bigger ones. And so, like, with ExxonMobil, Susan E. Carter has donated to Clinton more than once. In fact, twice in the month of September. I guess $2,300 might be the maximum for a single private donation. Also, Teresa Ferrilio has also donated twice. In May. Why would they be doing this? And, you know, we talk so much on this network about things like mountaintop removal and how we need to get away from coal and, you know, that the wars we fight are all about resources and oil. This stuff is important. And this comes back to that, you know, really, really hard issue to get any oxygen, which is K Street and the lobby money. You know, and its effect on politics. So, you know, when you have grassroots organizations that are saying, you know, we want our power generated in different ways, we want other options, how can those small voices compete against these huge amounts of money that can keep what until a few days ago was a struggling campaign financially for someone like Hillary Clinton? How can we expect to compete against that? Come down that means something. And, you know, if we still actually had debates and real public appearances and not just staged feel-good sessions where, you know, going back to the old days where, you know, you'd have a stump speech and, you know, you'd have people yelling out questions from the audience. I mean, we're long past that. We can't have that kind of democracy now, can we? We never get a chance to confront these people about this. You know, what does that oil money buy from you, Mr. Obama, Mrs. Clinton? You know, and I want a Democrat in office. I make no qualms about it. But I want to be able to hold their feet to the fire when they get in. Because we're kind of getting, you know, we're seriously running out of time here. You only have to look, like, I live where global warming has its earliest and strongest effects. We've just finished off 7 years of drought, 8 years of drought. And we have the first La Nina kicking in, and it's the hardest thing that has hit here in a long time. We have had, in February here in New South Wales, I think it was in the first 4 days of the month, we had something like double the normal monthly rainfall. Now, just because we've had all this rain doesn't mean that the drought is over. There's still something like two-thirds of this state that are in drought. Queensland's so flooded at the moment, it's just insane. Once it goes rolling off into the sea, and either next year or the year after, we end up having a run of a few El Niños in a row, and we have all that fresh growth, boom, the whole place is going to burn like it never had before. And this is an effect of global warming. The out of balance of these La Niña and El Niño systems. They used to kind of average out over time, you know, pretty much 50-50. In the last two decades, that hasn't been the case. In the last decade, we've had like 7-3 of the hot ones as far as it affects us here. So, you know, there's always, in everything, there's the follow the money aspect. Now, Huckabee hasn't taken much oil money. 18,000. And it all seems to be, most of it seems to be from oil and gas producer. But see, Huckabee's taken his money from the right-wing kind of Christian fundamentalist folks. And as far as I'm concerned, they're really stupid. because he doesn't strike me as a bright guy. And he's a pretty average bass player. Not that he's bad, but he's pretty average. Then again, music's supposed to be for enjoyment, so I ain't going to take it away from him. Bob liked that. But, you know, it just makes me... I was surprised when I went and had a look. Now, I was happy to see that, you know, Barack Obama, as far as all of the candidates that are still in the fight, aside from Huckabee, taking the least amount of money. But everyone, aside from Huckabee, has taken over $100,000. Bob's just popped in, I guess, about my bass player comment. You know, he's average because he has no soul. Ooh, that's a multi-level joke there. And, you know, when I see that, you know, Barack Obama, and, you know, there's a certain amount of this, you know, the candidates don't necessarily go to these corporations for the money. The corporations normally go to the candidates because they want influence. So, maybe this is the big hedging of the bet. You know, we've had this discussion of that, you know, Exxon's paid virtually nothing on the damages that they were found responsible for the Exxon Valdez. And, you know, it's been coming up into the Supreme Court for, you know, them to never have to pay. And so if it ends up going until the next Supreme Court, is this insurance against that? You know, here's a company who has been found guilty of negligence. Outright negligence. And unimaginable environmental damage by one act that we know of. Yeah, Bob's reminding me here. The Supreme Court, you know, said a few months ago that they would hear that Exxon's got a claim that they shouldn't have to pay the damages. Now, if you're a regular citizen and you're found negligent of something and told to pay damages, and you don't pay, it goes into collections, it goes to attorneys, they can declare you bankrupt, they can sell your non-work goods. So, why is it that outfits like this that will spend their money on political campaigns instead of paying the damages that the law said that they should pay? And, you know, I'm not surprised, you know, Bob again reminds me that, you know, they're going to get away with it because it takes a majority of the court to agree to hear such a case. And we have a stacked court. I mean, if there is anything to say that Shrubby's been successful with, is he's gotten the kind of Supreme Court that he was out to construct. So, you know, if anyone out there actually goes to an Obama event and you get to ask a question, can I ask that this be one of the possibilities for your question? You've taken a large donation from ExxonMobil, a company found to have been negligent and caused huge amounts of environmental damage. One, why did you accept such a donation? And two, what did it buy? What does it buy? Because if I'm going to vote for you, I need to know. That's what I want. But then I had a friend that used to always turn to me and say, how does it feel to want? Jeez. I tell you what, we're going to move on from that, and we're going to take a little break here. Bob, if you don't mind, I need to go and refill my bit of beverage. So stick around, folks. You listen to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I saw Obama speak in Madison on Tuesday night. It wasn't his best speech, but he was eloquent enough and inspirational enough for the 17,000 people who showed up in 15-degree weather to wait in line to see him at the Kohl Center. He talked a little more than usual about standing up for workers and hosing down trade agreements like NAFTA. And he talked a little more than usual about John McCain, lashing him to our current president and the disastrous Bush-McCain policies, as Obama now dubs them. He noted that McCain said we'd be in Iraq for 100 years, and that was reason enough not to give McCain 4 years in the White House, a line that drew a huge cheer from the crowd. But the loudest applause came when Obama urged his predominantly young audience to service. "We will invest in you," he said, "so you'll invest in your country." And he was most effective when he thumped Hillary Clinton, though not by name, for deriding Obama's false hopes. Foolishly, McCain has also started to mock Obama and his hopes. Obama's response? "My story tells me there's nothing false about hope. I shouldn't be here today. I wasn't born to money or to status," he said. And he told how Americans throughout our history have beaten the odds with hope. Cynicism, he said, is a sad form of wisdom. By banging the drum of hope and change, Obama delivered just what this crowd wanted to hear, and by now, it's what a majority of Democrats and independents want to hear. "Ready on day one" doesn't cut it next to that. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Foxed Up this Thursday midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at singer Sheryl Crow. Find out about her experience working for Michael Jackson.
Michael is, he's not like every other performer. And I think everyone has to sign a contract when they work with him, not to write a book, you know, about what goes on behind the scenes or whatever.
She'll also talk about her problems with Walmart. So be there this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And check out the links from today's show post, courtesy of ELO. You'll find the link to the EcoGeek article that then links you to that little oil money interface. It's quite a fun thing to surf around. And so anyway, this is one of those things that strikes me as why, or why not, I guess is it. You know, there's no regulation on fertilizers and the runoff. Farmers, you know, have no guidelines when it comes to this, and there's a huge amount of damage that comes from the use of fertilizers. And at one of the EcoGeek blogs at EnviroVore, there's a great little story here. Well, it's not great as in it's nice, but fertilizers and animal waste, both culprits in the Gulf Dead Zone. I've covered this before, but it's one of these things. You know, if the message didn't get through before, and mechanized farming is a huge problem, and it's going to end up being a huge Achilles heel if the economy really takes a dive bomb, and especially when peak oil really starts to hit hard, which it's already starting to hit. But the article says here, every year, beginning about now, an area of the ocean the size of New Jersey dies at the mouth of the Mississippi. I bet it was about a year ago the last time that I covered this. New USGS study shows that the Gulf of Mexico's dead zone is caused mainly from corn and soy fertilizers and animal waste running off of the seven states abutting the Mississippi, and also Indiana and Ohio along the Ohio River, which drains into the Mississippi. Ocean dead zones are caused by extremely low oxygen levels in the water, a condition known as hypoxia. Hypoxic conditions develop where there is an excess of agricultural runoff because of the high levels of nitrogen and phosphorus in fertilizer and manure. Massive algal blooms occur, algae in other words, where there is an abundance of these two nutrients. As the algae die and sink to the ocean floor, brigades of bacteria decompose, sucking copious amounts of oxygen from the water and creating a dead zone where no other organisms, aside from a few invasive jellyfish, can live. Fertilizer is not currently viewed as a pollutant by the EPA, and farmers have no regulations on their release of it. Animal waste from confined animal feeding operations, known as CAFOs, are supposed to be contained in lagoons capable of handling up to 25-year rain. Of course, upon a 25-year rain, inevitable, a large sewage fest flows straight into our rivers. Interestingly, the USGS study found that phosphorus from manure is not coming from the CAFOs. Range and pasteurized animals are contributing to over a third of the phosphorus pollution as well. Seems the fisher folk of the Gulf and the farmers in the Midwest might need to have a little throwdown over this Gulf dead zone. In the meantime, we can help by supporting rising initiatives for wetland restoration, which help remove pollutants, and regulations of fertilizer and animal waste runoff, and of course, by minimizing our consumption of industrial agricultural products, including soybeans and meat. Now, I saw a piece not long ago, I think it was part of the National Geographic Strange Days on Planet Earth, where they kind of figured out the reason that the grasslands had died off, which ended up affecting, I believe, the alpine trees, finally, the alpines, the big alpines, was because the marshlands around the river systems had been all cleared. And they've done a test area where they've actually gone and planted some of these marshlands. And also the reintroduction of wolves into the parks has also had an effect on this. But because elk, with the introduction of wolves, kept moving, grasslands were able to regenerate. And with that came beavers. And as they started doing water tests as time went on, just by introducing a parent species is really what caused, one of the big, lost for a word, carnivores released back into its system to bring balance. The elk couldn't just stay put. They had to keep moving. So the grassland started to come back. So then the marshes came back. And then the beavers came back. And then, for the first time in 70 years, alpine saplings actually got to grow past a year or two's growth for the first time since, like, 1920, 1930. And water samples down further in these river systems, because the grasslands and the swamps and the marshes had begun to return, chemical levels in the water dropped. So there's kind of a twofold thing to these dead zones. One, we're pumping copious amounts of these chemical fertilizers into our crops, which is a problem in many ways. One, petrol and chemical companies that make these synthetic fertilizers make a huge amount of money. That really isn't needed, but it is only needed when you're doing mechanized farming. And with the way that we've done such clearing, we end up with all this runoff, and none of even nature's systems in which to try and minimize the damage. And this is something that continues to happen every year. And these dead zones, you know, everything's connected. You know, I could kind of go off into a million tangents from this, but everything's connected. It's like that old joke, you know. The American soldier off in the Asia Pacific somewhere, you know, goes to the Chinese doctor for a headache. And the Chinese doctor starts, you know, doing acupuncture and puts some needles in his feet. Guy says, I told you I came in with a headache. What are you doing playing with my feet? He goes, silly American. Whole thing connected. But there's a point to that. But when you look at these dead zones and where you end up in a situation where nothing can actually live there aside from, you know, the kind of worst of the jellyfish, which isn't very nice, you end up having the bottom of the food chain, as we've seen off the west coast of North America. The protoplasm and the ectoplasm have begun to disappear. And what happens when you kill off the very bottom of the food chain? Every other single thing up the line is impacted. You know, this is one of the things that drives me crazy about the world in which we live today, and especially the United States. And I gotta say that this is the worst in the United States. There is this inability to look at or understand any subject or any situation past its face value. This is why we get conned with things like terrorism and, you know, gay marriage and all these other things that are used as wedge issues. No one ever looks past the initial information given. And there's this loss of kind of curiosity that just, it does us such a disservice. Bob reminds me, you know, these situations are also, with the dead zones, are probably, you know, part of the so-called red tides that take place there. And yes, you're right. That's the bacteria, if I'm not mistaken. Now, you know, you bring this kind of subject up with I hate using a term like this, but you know, it's a Fox type term. But some people, but you know who I'm talking about. People who don't want to, who think you can't do anything any different. When you explain to them that, you know, the mechanized farming and the slaughterhouse system that we have dumps all of this crap into the Mississippi and Ohio rivers, which ends up going down into the ocean and creating these dead zones. And they'll go, yeah, but we got to eat. And you realize, but yeah, we don't have to do it the way we're doing it. And they just don't want to hear it. But you have to kind of like, you know, grab their head, slam it on the desk once, figuratively, and say, no, but you got to listen. That affects other things, which are going to come back around and impact you in a huge way. And Lottie's adding in here, yeah, I believe you're talking about the red tides here, mate. Dinoflagellate, a small multi-celled animal. Yeah, it sometimes doesn't feel like, you know, America even exists anymore. You know, there was that, you know, painful Mitt Romney response a couple weeks back, you know, at one of the debates, or maybe it was a couple months back, where they said, you know, what do you think is the biggest thing wrong with America? And he just goes on this, you know, apple pie stroking, you know, I want to make love to the flag kind of thing of nothing. And he talked about American ingenuity. I haven't seen that American ingenuity really supported. I haven't seen new ideas and new concepts taken on. And, you know, all this lip service to the power of the American people, well, it's been so stripped from them that no one with a new and really unique idea, or maybe even a not-so-new idea that hasn't been tried yet but has proved in practice to be maybe a better option. Because, well, we just can't do it any different. This is the system we got, and we got to stick with it. But it just makes no sense. But it's all part of that, you know, fear thing.
Fearing change. You can't have change because change is uncertain and it's scary.
What scares me more is not making the changes. That's what scares the living bejesus out of me. You know, Bob had that interview earlier today where we talked about how California has effectively over a decade, two decades, whatever it was, actually per capita cut their electricity use in half compared to the rest of the nation. You know, I might not care for Arnie all that much, but he's kind of turning back to the way California was back in the late 70s and 80s because of their pollution problems, leading the nation on pollution issues and environmental issues. I remember working in the paint industry, working for a small paint manufacturer, and I was working in the business when the whole volatile organic compounds labeling and control system came in, and it all came out of Florida. Florida had done it first, and then it was decided to be picked up nationally, and if I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago, the current administration ended up getting rid of it. Can't quote that, but I do believe I heard that. And I remember, you know, I worked for a small family-owned paint company. You know, they still actually, you know, it still actually filled all the cans via gravity feed system. So cool. I bet they're still the same. But we sold a couple of the major brands in the stores, and you know their stuff. You know their stuff coming through is going, oh, the cost, oh, the this, oh, the and all this fear. And meanwhile, the old man and his son who formulated all of our stuff are going, it's not a big deal. Oh, we got to print new labels. Oh, we had to send off for some testing to actually get what the compounds were. Wasn't hard. And guess what? We discovered a few things. We discovered we didn't need as much of this volatile crap in our stuff. And guess what? The volatile crap is the expensive stuff. It's made us more profitable. You know, they're all run-on effects. But, boy, am I going off on Tangentville today. It's been that kind of day. Anyone who does computer or web work will know that you have those days where, especially if you are doing support, which I kind of end up doing a bit of here and there, where you end up, you're working on like a major project and then someone rings up and they're having a bit of an emergency. And it's the changing gears and trying to translate from the technically not savvy to me, then from me to someone else being technically savvy. And it really can just kind of make you a bit goofy by the end of the day. I just before joining the horn section, I got an email, one of my clients having some email trouble, which is not a big deal. But, you know, you got to get the answers out. You got to get what's going on out before you go to the people whose systems you're hiring to do it. And I'm the middleman in this situation, before you go telling them that there's a problem, making sure that it isn't, that it's their problem and not actually the user's problem. But, you know, it's been one of those kind of days. So, hence why during the horn section, I was just a bit of a smart-ass answer kind of guy. Just the kind of mood that I'm in. But, you know, it really surprises me. Well, it doesn't surprise me, but it seems almost like a no-brainer that, you know, if we've been watching this dead zone growing, and it's not the only one, there's a number of them around the planet, that there hasn't been any kind of regulation. You know, farmers maybe need to test the levels of the runoff. But I bet that there's a lot of lobbying money that gets involved saying, no, 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 no. You can't tell the farmers they have to use less of our chemical fertilizer now. You know, and just to remind everybody, you know, there's a couple of countries out there, one of them being Ethiopia. Remember Ethiopia being, you know, the Ethiopian famine decades ago? Maybe, you know, still running a decade ago? Well, they basically told the World Bank to go get bent because they weren't going to take genetically modified crops. And they came up with a very holistic and organic natural farming system, biodynamic farming system. And without chemical pesticides, without chemical fertilizers, they have grown amazing amounts of food. And the systems in which we use now in the Western world with the overuse of mechanized farming, it doesn't get higher yields. It just makes certain people more money. Monsanto is a great example. Personally, maybe my number one most hated company in the world. The things that they get up to, you all remember the patented pig story from last year? We didn't design the pig, but we're going to copyright its genetic marking and call it ours. So if that pops up in your pig or your cow, you got to pay us damages. Huh? Pardon me? Whose ass did you pull that out of? But yet, governments back this stuff. How life can become an intellectual property. just blows me away. Just blows me away. I think I've kind of I had I had another little thing here, which I think is an interesting concept. Maybe I'll check out the link. There's a new research strategy being looked into in Georgia of a zero pollution car, not zero pollution as in the air car concept, but a vehicle that captures the carbon it creates and then is able to turn that carbon back into fuel, which I think is an interesting concept. It's a great article. Like I said, it's all part of that. It's in a vision kind of state at the moment. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff, this is the ingenuity that needs the big support. It's these kind of ideas that can make some real changes. But anyway, we got to wrap it up. Thanks for joining me today, folks, for another Head On Radio Network Broadcasting Day. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing. Thanks to all the News Ninjas and ELO and all of the rest of our mods and bloggers for everything that they do for us. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks to Scott Berry at V1 Ladder Productions. And as we stay here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good morning, America. Good morning, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Welcome to Dialogue. I host my own radio show called The Inside Scoop, which is nationally syndicated. You can find out more about it at radioinsidescoop.com. But today and every month, I'm always glad to be here on WPFW dialoguing with you, and we have a lot to talk about. First of all, of course, there is the Potomac primary. I want to know how you voted and why you voted. My endorsed candidate, Senator Barack Obama, did extremely well, as all of you know by now, winning three-quarters of the votes in the District of Columbia primary, more than 60% in the states of Virginia and Maryland, and actually overtaking Hillary Clinton in the delegate race. But does that mean he's got the nomination? Oh, no, not at all. In fact, no matter how he does in the future, or frankly, no matter how well Senator Clinton does in the future, it's extremely likely that neither of them will get the number of pledged delegates they need to win the Democratic nomination. And that has to do with the messed up rules of the Democratic National Committee. I want to talk about those rules today. One is the role of superdelegates. We'll talk about who they are and the role that they play.